Hey, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to this week's message. My name's Aaron, and I'm on the staff team here at Eastlake. Everything we do around here depends on the generous donations of our local and online community, people just like you, who tune into these messages and see great benefit from living that idea that life is a gift and love is the point. So if you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by going to eastlakecc.com. With that, let's jump into this week's message. Today, we hear from Kristen Birchnell as she continues our new series, The Crisis and the Miracle.
Well, hey there. This is Kristen. This is not the actual message for this week, but I wanted to start by saying that I filmed my message, my talk for this week on Tuesday morning of this week, and at the time, I had not heard anything about what was happening in Minneapolis. I did not know who George Floyd was, and I wanted to start this message by saying that because I think it would be strange to not talk about that, especially as things have kind of erupted this week. And so I wanted you to know as you go in to listen to this video that that is why I don't mention it. However, I do think there are some things to be mentioned, and so I hope you'll stick around, and after you watch it, I'll be back with a few reflections of my own. Thanks. Well, hello there and welcome to Eastlake. My name is Kristen. I'm excited to be talking with you today. Well, first of all, this is very strange. I'm just in my house talking to my phone. But second of all, it's just very strange to be alone in my house. It's feeling very, very different and I'm liking it. So I'm thankful for this time to share with you and to be with you online or podcast. And then second of all, if you're watching online on video, I just want to say I've been noticing in all the videos that are coming out from various organizations, people have very studious backgrounds like books and things like that. And I just have my house. I have kids games and artwork and a TV. I have a TV. So anyways, I'm just not reading books, so I'm not going to put them behind me to make you think that I am. Okay, so we are in this series called The Crisis and the Miracle, talking about this experience that we are collectively having with COVID-19. And I just have to say, I'm thankful to be able to share about it and to hear what other people are saying about it. It's a very, very strange time and quite remarkable, honestly, that we are all experiencing this together. A shift in paradigms happening around the world at the very same time. It is at the same time horrifying and also hopefully positive in some ways. And so I'm just grateful to be able to share with you today. I'm just going to be sharing about what's been going on with me and what I have been processing lately. I have been at home with my two kids. They are 4 years old and almost three, and my husband is working. And so I'm just going to say, if you have friends who have little kids who are home, you should maybe check in on them because I don't know if they're okay. I, like many and almost every other parent out there, I've been home with my kids all day long doing whatever it is that is fun for them. And so for us, it is Frozen. My daughter is obsessed with the Frozen movies, specifically Elsa. So she, all day long we play. She is Elsa. I am now Anna. She refers to me as Anna throughout the whole day. My son obliges and is sometimes Kristoff, if he feels generous with his time. And my husband, the genius that he is, decided he is going to be a rock giant. So he lays on the couch and throws pillows at us while we play. Just genius, and I'm annoyed that he thought of that. But more recently, my daughter has been saying he's the water knock, and so she gets to ride on his back. So if you haven't seen the Frozen movies, sorry. That is my reality. So I thought I'd show you a picture of when my husband Andy made my daughter an Elsa castle out of cardboard from a job that he had, and she was just absolutely thrilled. And then there's also a video too, and I wanted to show you. She thinks the reflection of light on her sequins from her costume is actual magic that happened when the castle came to our house. It's just really sweet. So here it is. And this is our existence. For going on 78 days, I play Frozen game every day. We play Legos. We play the puppy game. Oh my gosh, the puppy game. Are other parents having to play the puppy game where you're a puppy or your kids are puppies and cats? It's a special one. We're baking, we're drawing, we're painting, we're doing all the things that kids think are fun. And it's been good. I know that this is special. It's been sweet and fun, but it has also been really hard. And it's been really exhausting. And I've had some downright really bad days. And I began to notice something about those bad days. They just didn't sit well with me. At the end of the day, I felt bad for having a bad day. And I noticed it seems like it's very American to not be able to sit with the bad, to not be able to let bad or hard exist. We have to try to do something to fix it and turn it around. And I found myself sending texts to friends saying things like, well, I just had the worst parenting day of my life, but there's always tomorrow, right? And I saw so many posts on social media that are about finding the positive and 100 days of gratefulness. I even got an email while I was writing this that was titled, Find Your Silver Lining. And while I think all of those things are great, I think they are fantastic and I see their point, I really do. But I did feel too like something was missing. And there are hundreds, I'm sure, research papers on why gratitude is important for emotional well-being. I did a talk about that at Eastlake. But what I have been thinking about during this time, I've been ruminating on the idea that there's a pressure, I will say for me, that I am feeling to get to gratitude, to get to happy too quickly. And forcing gratitude when you're not actually feeling it, I think might miss the process for authentically arriving there at all. And it's okay to disagree with me, but that's just what I want to talk about a little bit today. I want to talk about how during this quarantine, I have been trying to feel what is real. And that's what we're going to spend time on today. Emotions and feelings are there to reveal what is true. And I think we do ourselves a disservice if we try to correct them. Even though I think it happens pretty often. So I wanted to give you an example of when I found myself doing this recently. On Mother's Day, so my family, we are fortunate, we have a property, a cabin over on the peninsula, and we've been alternating our time there. So someone gets to go, and then they leave and clean, and then someone else gets to go. And so I got to be there on Mother's Day, which I was very happy about, and then my mom and dad were coming later that day, and we were gonna leave. And my mom asked me if we could overlap because they haven't seen the kids in months. And I haven't seen my parents in months. And so I decided, yes, we would overlap. While they were unpacking their car and we were packing ours, they could see the kids and interact. And we talked with my kids ahead of time. They understand the no touching and hugging. So when it comes time for that, when my parents arrive, we're super excited to see them. We're in the driveway waiting. And they get out of their car. And I see my mom, and I see my dad. I can't hug my mom, even though it's Mother's Day. My sweet dad has his hands in his pockets to try, I think, to like refrain from grabbing my kids and throwing them up in the air and hugging them. And I just had a very emotional response to it all. I found myself with this surge of emotion, and I started to cry, and I tried to get control of myself. And I started telling myself things like, this is okay, it's not gonna last forever, at least no one is sick, we're really lucky, it's a beautiful day. I was just trying to stop what I was feeling. But in the end, I wasn't able to do that. I was just so terribly sad. And I kind of excused myself and went back into the house, into the pantry, and I cried. I was just overwhelmed with how sad I was. And there was actually something really grounding and calming about being able to just let that happen and not do anything about it. About being able to say, I'm so sad, and leaving it at that. And we're not very easily able to leave emotions as they are.
Well, Well, hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Eastlake Podcast. This is Ryan with a quick interruption. We'll jump back into the message in just a second. Once again, just wanted to say thank you to so many of you who are continuing to contribute. Many of you who don't even live anywhere physically near us. There's no geography that unites us. What unites us is this growing awareness that life is a gift and love is the point. And this crazy dream of cultivating a community that doesn't center around theological or supernatural agreement, but instead says ultimately a community of people who journey towards becoming love, that could actually make a difference in the world. So thanks for being a part of that. Thanks for contributing. If you haven't yet, but you find these messages helpful to your life, consider making a donation. Just hop onto our website, eastlakecc.com, and you can make a one-time or an ongoing donation there. So thanks for considering that. Thanks for listening. I hope you have a great rest of your week. Let's jump back in with the message.
Just a couple weeks ago, Glennon Doyle, she's been doing these days where she reads to kids, or she has these lessons for kids, and she read this book, and I watched it, and I wanted to read it to you. I read it to my kids now. If you're listening to the podcast, this might not work well, but maybe you can look it up online or order it for your family. It's a really wonderful book. It's called Grumpy Monkey. So here we go. I'm going to read it to you and try to show pictures. I'm not a teacher, so we'll see how this goes. One wonderful day, Jim Pansy woke to discover that nothing was right. The sun was too bright, the sky was too blue, and the bananas were too sweet. Jim was confused. What's going on? Maybe you're grumpy, suggested Norman from next door. I'm not grumpy, Jim insisted. On his walk, he met Marabou. Jim's grumpy, said Norman. Why are you grumpy, Jim? Asked Marabou. It's such a wonderful day. Grumpy? Me? I'm not grumpy, said Jim. But look at how you're standing, Marabou said. It's true, said Norman. You're all hunched. So Jim loosened up. Then he ran into Lemur. Jim's grumpy, Norman told Lemur. Why are you grumpy, Jim? Asked Lemur. It's such a wonderful day. Grumpy? Me? I'm not grumpy, said Jim. Your eyebrows look grumpy, said Lemur. It's true, said Norman. They're all bunched up. So Jim raised his brow. Then he tripped over Snake. Oh no, said Norman. That's the last thing you need when you're feeling so grumpy. Grumpy? Me? I'm not grumpy, said Jim. Then why that frown, said Snake. I think it's because he tripped over you, Norman whispered to Snake. So Jim put on a smile. Finally, Jim looked happy. I love this picture so much. But he didn't feel happy inside. Everyone wanted Jim to enjoy this wonderful day. You should sing with us, said the birds. Jim didn't feel like singing. You should swing with us, said the monkeys. Jim didn't feel like swinging. You should roll with us, said the zebras. Jim didn't feel like rolling. You should stroll with us, said the peacocks. Jim didn't feel like strolling. You should lie in the grass. You should stomp your feet. You should take a bath and make a splash. You should hug someone. You should laugh. You should take a nap. You should eat old meat or some honey. You should jump up and down. You should sit in the sun. You should dance. But Jim didn't feel like doing any of that. Why are you grumpy, Jim? Asked the others. It's such a wonderful day. I'm not grumpy, shouted Jim as he beat his chest. And he stormed off. Jim felt sorry. A little sorry for shouting at everyone, but mostly sorry for himself. I guess I am grumpy, Jim sighed. And just as he was starting to feel really sad, he came upon Norman. Norman was slumped. His eyebrows were bunched up and he was frowning. What's the matter? Are you grumpy? Asked Jim. No, I danced with porcupines, said Norman. Are you okay? Asked Jim. It hurts, but I'll probably feel better soon enough, said Norman. Are you still grumpy? Yes, said Jim, but I'll probably feel better soon enough, too. For now, I need to be grumpy. It's a wonderful day to be grumpy, said Norman. Jim agreed. And he already felt a little bit better. I just love that book. I love the confirmation of sometimes you just have to feel the way you're feeling in order for it to pass. Regarding that text I sent to one of my friends, one of them that I sent about how there's always tomorrow, one friend wrote me back that night and she said, yes, there is always tomorrow, but it's also okay to just be bummed about how today went. And I remember getting that text, I was in bed and I was so exhausted and I was trying to figure out where did it go wrong and how can I do better tomorrow, what will be different, and it just felt nice to have someone say, it's okay to just be bummed. I also remember Felina Hewerts, a friend of Eastlake, a few weeks ago posted on Instagram about savoring every moment of life, the easy and the difficult. And I was struck by her use of the word savor, to fully appreciate. And so I just started paying attention to my feelings, experiencing them fully and not trying to correct them. I was trying to just feel what is real. And the reality is that I and we experience a wide spectrum of emotions every day. One study that I read said that we spend 90% of our day feeling emotions, 90% of our awake time. I thought, that's crazy, especially when we know it's not 90% of our day feeling happy. So what do we do with these bad feelings or bad days? I read an article on Psychology Today from Jennifer Rollin, and I wanted to share part of it with you. She writes, from the time that we are children, many of us are told things such as don't cry and there's nothing to be sad about. As a culture, we are often taught that we should try to avoid unpleasant emotions at all costs. Thus, for many, the primary impulse when they are experiencing unpleasant emotions is to try to escape from those feelings. Hurt, frustration, pain, sadness, and anger are all natural and healthy parts of the human experience. When we try to suppress these emotions, we are unable to thrive. Part of having a full life is feeling all of your emotions, both pleasant and unpleasant. It is beaming with joy and feeling like your heart is full of gratitude during some moments. It is also experiencing heartbreak and disappointment and truly letting yourself sit with these feelings. And I found myself wondering, so why is it so hard to sit with these feelings? And I don't think it's all denial, and I'm sure there are many, many reasons, but I have two thoughts that I wanted to share today. So the first is this. We've been taught that certain emotions are positive and other ones are negative. Even if you look at the research being done on emotions, you'll see that the researchers call them this. So typical positive emotions, gratefulness, happiness, joy, anticipation. Typical negative ones, fear, anger, sadness, disappointment. And the problem is that when researchers are calling them positive and negative, we are taught that certain ones are negative, in fact. And so then when we're feeling something that we're told is negative, then it has a double impact on us because now we're not only feeling those feelings, we're feeling sad, but we also feel negative for having a negative feeling. And we need an adjustment here. We need to see fear, anger, and sadness as normal, not negative. The article I just read you called them natural and healthy. Now, surely our reactions to them are not always healthy, but we are in control of our actions, not of our emotions and feelings. If we can view emotions typically seen as negative, as natural, then I think we can sit with them more easily. We can say, wow, I'm so angry. And then we get more familiar with how that feels. We see that they are just a part of the flow of emotions. Our emotions go up and down and back and forth. There's a flow to them all day. And feeling them fully allows us to release them and then move forward. And many times also what I've been noticing in what I mentioned earlier, there's this need to try to fix these negative ones. But I've been struck by how much of my emotional experiences actually don't require an action. You don't always have to do something when you notice how you're feeling. Sometimes just being present with it is all that needs to happen. Sometimes we just need to savor them, appreciate them fully, and let them be what they are, like Grumpy Monkey. The other thing we see when we release this need to call them positive and negative is that all emotions are intrinsically tied together. So even if we can get over those titles, we will see that some of them at least seem very opposite of each other. Amy Olsen, I was telling her about this, and she heard someone say comfortable and uncomfortable. And I like that term. I like those terms. But some do feel better than others, that's for sure. I would rather feel happy than sad. But acceptance of all emotions as valid and natural helps us experience the others more fully. It makes me think of the movie Inside Out. Hopefully you've seen it. If you haven't, I recommend it. But it's this animated movie about a little girl named Riley who moves from, I think it's Minnesota, to San Francisco. And the main characters in the movie are her emotions. They're in her head, and they're given these personas. So there's joy and sadness and fear and disgust and anger. I think there's another one. But anyway, the two main ones that we spend time with are joy and sadness. And long story short, you should watch the movie if you haven't. I'm going to spoil it right now. Joy is trying to control this experience that Riley's having because she only wants her to feel happy. But what we end up discovering is that you can't be without sadness to experience joy. And so I wanted to read from an article that I read about this movie. It says this: every emotion needs the others to help give it context and poignancy. Sadness simply exists to emphasize joy. And Joy realizes she shouldn't be fighting sadness, but embracing her role. What Joy learns throughout the course of the film is that nobody can be happy all the time. Without some sort of contrast, happiness can't be appreciated. It takes the bad to understand the good. Joy's blue hair is symbolic of this connective tissue. In the end, Joy allows sadness to touch all Riley's core emotions and give them the complexity she now understands is crucial to overall emotional understanding. Riley will be able to appreciate the joy more fully if she experiences tinges of sadness. Now, I'm seeing the truth of this during my pandemic experience. My immense sadness and fear are there, but so also is gratitude and joy. My emotions, I think, are kind of like my toddlers. The snuggles and the hugs and the kisses are so much better because my kids also still hit and kick me. Is that the same? Maybe it's not the same. What I'm trying to say is, and we all know this to be true, I'm just trying to remind you that gratitude and happiness are experienced only because you also experience their opposite, or you experience their absence. You recognize their presence more fully when you have experienced their absence too. So I think we can sit with our emotions and let them be what they are when we recognize that they're all tied together and that it's natural and even helpful to experience them all. The second reason why I think we don't sit well with our uncomfortable emotions is that we have a comparison problem. We try to correct our negative or uncomfortable emotions by comparing them to what we know others or what we think others are experiencing. So we say things like, well, I don't have it that bad. At least we're not sick. It could be worse. And I don't think that's necessarily bad. I really don't. I think it's an attempt at self-awareness and recognition of what is true. It's trying to give ourselves perspective, and those are good. But it does prevent us sometimes from feeling things fully. And I'm more convinced than ever that if you don't allow them to process through as they need to, then they'll sit with you longer. I talked about this years and years ago. I did a message at Eastlake about grief. That, and this is my theory. There might be something more official on it. But this was my theory, and it still is today. That in our sociological and cultural kind of practices and processes, we establish this internal scale from which we're feeling emotions in comparison to others. So let's just say it's a 1 through 10 scale. So I'm experiencing sadness and I feel like it's a 6. But then I look at someone else experiencing something that seems way worse. They must be at a 9 or 10. So mine must not really be a 6. It's more like a 2, and we subdue it and we squash it down. So for example, I'm feeling so sad that I can't hug my parents. But then I correct myself and say, but somebody else is dealing with the reality of coronavirus in their family. And so what I'm feeling can't possibly be this, that I need to push it down the scale. And again, I don't think it's necessarily bad. I see the trueness here, the attempts at self-regulation, the compassion for other people. Those are lovely things. And I can say that my son not being able to have a final day at preschool is literally and absolutely not as sad as some of the realities that we're seeing in the news. I know that. Please hear me say that. But where this turns negative is our inability to process our own emotions, to correct them before feeling them, when we tell ourselves we shouldn't feel this or shouldn't feel that. The reality of the scale example, I think, is that we're not on the same scale of sadness with everyone else. We're on our own scale of emotions, and they go up and down. So if we can step away from this comparison for a moment and allow ourselves to just feel what is authentically real in the moment, I think we'll see that everyone is experiencing their own scale of emotions all day, every day. We're just emotional beings walking around. And this, my friends, is what I think is so crucial of what's so crucial about feeling what is real. Compassion for and connection with other people. Recognizing that we are all dealing with these types of emotions all the time. So back to the Mother's Day story. I composed myself after having a good cry in the pantry. And then I went out and, you know, Andy was finishing packing the car. My parents were unpacking and standing around in the driveway. And I said it was time to leave. And my son started to cry. He was so sad. I'm getting sad talking about it. He was so sad because Grandma and Grandpa had just gotten there. And because I had allowed myself to feel what was real, I was able to connect with him. And I didn't have to tell him, don't cry, this will all be over sometime. I just hugged him and said, I know, it's really sad, isn't it? And allowing yourself to experience the full spectrum of emotions is what will allow you to connect to other people. If you hear anything today, I hope you hear this. If you don't allow yourself to feel sad, how will you react when someone else in your life is feeling so sad? If you don't allow yourself to feel angry, how will you have compassion for someone who punches the wall? What people need right now, I think, is compassion and understanding. And you can do that when you have compassion and understanding for yourself, for your own feelings, for validating your own emotions so that you can validate others. That is what I'm learning during this pandemic. The crisis of COVID-19 has brought forth the miracle of me being able to connect with reality. I can't busy my way out of feelings. I can't grab the kids and run to Target when I feel the need to escape. I just have to feel what I am feeling. And it's been so good because I have felt immense sadness and fear. But I also have experienced really true, amazing moments of joy and gratitude. And I appreciate those so much and I notice them. And so that's my hope for you today, is that you can feel what is real. So may you go in peace or fear or anger, whatever is real for you today, because I truly do believe they are all working together. Thank you. Well, hey there, and thanks for sticking around. Like I mentioned at the beginning, it would feel strange to hear a message talking about emotions and feelings and not address what is going on right now, especially this week, although we all know this problem has existed for so long. And I have some fear talking about this because I don't want to cause more pain or say something unintentionally so that could exacerbate a problem. And so I say this with a little bit of trepidation and some fear, but that's not going to stop me. a few reflections on what I just said. I think we are all encountering right now, outside of coronavirus, the opportunity to sit with uncomfortable feelings and not to correct them. And so I hope we will do that. I hope that we will sit with sadness, and anger and frustration and guilt and all of those things that we think feel negative, let's just recognize them as uncomfortable. And let's not try to correct them by telling ourselves that it's not our problem or there's nothing we can do or at least we weren't there, things like that. I also said in my message that I was surprised about how many of my emotions that I feel throughout the day don't require me to do something about them. And I do think that that's true. My kids are here. I do think that's true. When I said that, I was thinking in my mind of, like, when I was telling that Mother's Day story and I felt sad, I didn't need to do anything about that. I just needed to feel sad. Or when I feel anger towards a friend or my husband, I don't need to necessarily do something out of that anger towards that situation in that moment. But that doesn't mean that we don't let all of our emotions teach us and show us what is true, which I also said. And then in some cases, they do need to spur us on to action. We need to not let these moments pass, not let these emotions pass without teaching us something about ourselves. So I watched the video of George Floyd, and I'll say, first of all, I didn't want to, and that in itself is a privileged position to be in, I recognized, and so I did. I watched it, and I'm letting those feelings sit with me, and then I'm trying to figure out what they're teaching me. And the thing that has made the most sense that I have read this week is that this is a white people problem. And so that means it's my problem. And so I'm taking some time to try to look and see, where is this problem in me? Because it would be really easy for someone like me to say, well, I would never do that. I would never say that. I would never call. And that feels like a cop-out, honestly. And I'm recognizing that in myself and trying to see, so where is this in me? And I also am not sure what to do yet. I think I'm taking time to listen and read and watch and see what is being asked of people like me, and then I will do it. And so I guess what I'm encouraging all of us as a community to do is to let those emotions be real and don't try to change them or forget them, and let them teach you about yourself and about our community and our culture. And then let's figure out what is there for me to do and then do it. I think our emotions and our feelings can be great teachers, and I'm open and encouraging myself to be taught and to listen. And so I don't have much more to say beyond that, except for that I'm open. I'm wanting to receive input on what I can do and what are the necessary steps for all of us to be able to move forward and to raise the next generation to not have this be the same. History has repeated itself for too long, and it's time for things to change. So let's do that together. Thanks.